You're listening to the Winners and Losers radio program, the Friday show with Karen Valentine and John Case. And today we welcome Eli, a vice president of the Young Democrats at Shepherd University, to talk to us about the youth and politics a little bit. Welcome. Jack, well, turn it up a little bit. Okay. Go ahead. Try again and identify yourself.
Okay. So, you know, of course, start with my name. My name's Eli. But so I am the vice president and the SGA senator for Young Democrats on campus. And to be honest, the biggest thing that our club faces is just trying to get people interested.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was COVID-19 or the kind of seasonal nature of the club. But yeah, we've really been struggling with membership. So I only got here in fall 2021. Right. So of course I couldn't see what it was like before COVID, but the whole time in the club, it's just, well, how can we get more people interested? And yeah. I think, well, that's a kind of a Shepherd University wide issue, it seems. It just might be fact that, you know, we call it small school syndrome. But so our biggest successes were last semester during midterm elections. And I suspect that come fall 2024, we're going to get this huge wave of interest. And then in spring 2025, that's going to fizzle out as it seemingly always does.
Well, the elections will certainly excite everybody in lots of different directions. But so it's true that the COVID has limited everybody, and I don't think there's any organization that hasn't been cramped at the very least, you know, by the inability to associate except through Zoom meetings and things. And I don't know what the remedy to that is, honestly. It seems somehow empowering the giant media more than anybody, right? Everybody stays home and watches the movies. Everybody, you know, you communicate through, you're doing remote work in many occupations, right? My wife used to work downtown all week mostly, and now she's, you know, goes in 2 days or I would say once every week basically on the average. And meetings are, for example, I'm an officer in the local labor council, and yes, it's pretty tough getting people to meetings, okay? And especially, I mean, you have folks that are working in, like teaching and occupations and healthcare, emergency services, firefighting people are affiliated. And it's the level of frustration is high, but also the difficulty of meeting. I mean, for example, one of our teacher reps, I think she's president of the local here, AFT local. She's raising kids, right? Who there's no more, you know, the level of childcare went down tremendously, you know, during the pandemic, right? And so you can't go anywhere. And after you get home from work, and then the frontline work, you know, is, you know, the level of stress just keeps going up. So I understand that. Finding a way in springtime to breathe, maybe doing things outside sometimes helps. Okay. Here comes Karen. Food is rarely a loser. Okay. And of course, if you have a hot band or something like that, then that's even better. Right. But, when I was a student, a graduate student at University of Buffalo many moons ago, we we were able to put 6,000 people into the streets of Buffalo on the protesting the Vietnam War. Actually, it was, I think it was protesting some particular act, you know, in the middle of Richard Nixon's sojourn. But that was extraordinary. I mean, it was a really, I mean, that had never, people kept saying, well, that hasn't happened since 1936. And so I wouldn't lose hope. What are the issues when you talk to people that are, even you see, what are the issues that you think are motivating them at all toward politics, or what's driving them away, maybe? I'd rather do anything but that kind of
I don't know. People will do this. What's the word here? I don't want to call it double think, but their reason to engage is almost their reason not to engage. So they'll say it's a super crazy time. Everything's very polarized. You know, I need to get out there because I think a lot of our left-right divide feels very grand and life and death at the moment, which I'm not really sure if it'll ever start, like, stop feeling that way for a lot of people. But people will say that, and they're like, wow, the time is now. I need to act. And then they'll also say, but it's just so toxic. It's just such a harsh environment. I think I want to stay out of it. And it's strange. You'll see people kind of, like, say both. So that, I don't know. That's a very common, like, type of response that I get.
Yeah, it's hard.
I agree, Eli. I even get that from adults. Yeah, I get that from people in my age group. I know some very well-educated people that have stopped voting, and it boggles my mind a little bit, but it's discouraging in one way, but I know what you mean. It's like people like to keep toxicity out of their life, and It can be pretty daunting.
Hey, I just solved.
Can you hear me, John?
Yes, I can, because I just solved my. I thought it was Eli's problem that his microphone was, but it wasn't. What the right side of my headset was not working. So now it is. Now I can hear you fine. Good morning, Karen. It's great to see you this morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Eli. Nice to meet you.
He was just discussing one of the things, you know, it's like the leftovers of the pandemic. It's hard to get people active when it's the only way you can associate is electronically. And, you know, you can't have a meeting. It's hard to get people to show up. But is that getting... is that getting any better at all? Since you guys have been... When did you get reorganized at the beginning of the year? Have you been active all year, pretty much?
I don't know if the club ever stopped being active, but it hit about like a 3 to 5 person membership and has been riding out flat at that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've done some like tabling out in the student center, like, hey, are you interested? I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, when's your meeting? And we're like, oh, at this time. You know, and, like not even one person shows up. Like we did something and we got like 30 people to sign and, that they were interested in. I don't even think one person came. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's us, you know, but, yeah. And actually this semester, both me and the president who I've really been keeping the club alive have a really intensive, like academic load this semester.
Right.
So the club kind of, you know, organization on campus exists really right now on a hiatus.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but I'm starting to kind of, come to see it as a little bit of naturally of a seasonal thing. So, yeah. As we get closer and closer to the election cycle, or we start to see like presidential, like the debates pick up, I think people are going to start increasingly get more interest. And so we'll
Are people
probably
are the people
with
you
that.
talk to interested? Are they? What are they? I mean, what? There's a lot of issues you could be concerned about. I mean, one is how you're going to pay the school debt, because it doesn't look like it's going to be forgiven. I mean, never. Right. So, are there issues about? I mean, how do people feel about the school? I mean, are they really engaged in it? Are a lot of people unable to finish their degrees? I mean, what's the other?
That's not something that we've gotten too much. Of course, I'll hear people check a lot of the typical single issue stuff. We do have a club on campus that's Students for Reproductive Rights. So we will get people from there be like, oh, hey, we sympathize with you guys, but they're more focused on their club, which I think even actually these past 2 semesters, I think they've had a tank in membership as well. So I don't know, the whole school seems to be suffering from this I guess difficulty to get people just
Are
out
people,
there. But
in your experience, are people getting jobs when they graduate in their anything related to their field?
that's a good question. So I will say I am a double major of political science and environmental studies. And for in environmental studies, the answer is definitely yes.
Yeah, right.
Because there's constant like internships for that sort of thing. Just
Yeah.
constantly being cranked out. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people stay at Shepherd, I realized. I had a friend who graduated last spring and then now he works in admissions.
Getting hired by the college.
So
Okay.
the graduating from Shepherd to
All
working to Shepherd
right.
Pipeline might be something to
Right.
talk about.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's kind of a that's kind of West got a kind of West Virginia style to it.
I'm wondering how the multiple organizations could work together to rally some interest. And I always around a presidential election is a time to really get people interested. But someone, Eli, you studied political science, and people that follow politics, we know that local politics can sometimes be equally important in all of these issues. And it's hard for people to recognize that. And I think we have a real crisis in our population now where there's a real lack of even understanding how government works and how the whole process works. John and I have talked about that. So, I mean, I think the lead up to the presidential election is always a good time to rally people and get people engaged because it's kind of when people are paying attention because they can't avoid it. It's everywhere, But I think too, knowing people in your generation, I don't know what the fix is going to be for the lackluster attitude that kind of stuck around after COVID, the pajama effect, I call it.
Yeah.
So
Right.
it's a real struggle, but I'm just wondering if multiple clubs couldn't get together and even work with professors to almost even within their curriculum or when they're talking about issues, like say, hey, that this is, happening on the college campus, right? And like get involved. But it becomes a full-time endeavor. And like you said, you have a big academic, load this semester, and it's just it frightens me and it saddens me that we don't have more young people engaged. And yeah, that's just my commentary on that. I don't
Yeah,
have a
right.
solution.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you your own what motivates you to stay political?
Me?
No, I know what motivates you,
Oh,
Karen. Yeah.
okay.
No, I shouldn't say that. I know a little bit of what motivates you.
Yeah, that's a long list.
Anyway, so Eli, so what do you have in mind, maybe running for office? I mean, Rod Snyder was in your position here not too long ago, right? Well, 10 decade or so ago,
right?
And he had he's run for a number of offices and certainly has been a national leader of Young Democrats, but I don't know. He's him, you're you. What's your thinking about politics?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to announce me running for office just yet.
Not a candidate for president yet.
But, you know, I think everyone kind of imagines themselves in that position. And, you know, what would I do if I was in that position? But
right.
And I don't know. I think politics is so infused with literally everything. You know, fundamentally, to me, what politics is about is how can you organize society to get to, you know, what is the ideal? You know, how can you maximize, you know, this is an annoying philosophical answer, but how can you maximize goodness for the most amount of people, most amount of time,
right,
et cetera. And I think, of course, I want to invest in my own individual security in the sense that sometimes I don't always want to go to meetings, you know, sometimes I still have that like COVID brain left over where I want to sit inside in my pajamas and turn off my camera on Zoom. But I think wanting to strive towards like an ideal society, I think that's just, I don't want to say it gives me something to do with my life, but it's, I don't know, it's something I feel like I want to work towards.
So, well, a more ideal society, like a less unequal one?
I think most people would define it in that way, yeah.
How about, if I ask you the question, well, I will ask you, what is an American?
I don't know. That's not a question I have too much investment in, but, you know, if you feel like you're an American, if you feel like you embody the American spirit, whatever that may or may not be.
It's a feeling.
Whatever passport you have.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what passport you have. Well, I mean, in a way, we've become a nation of all nations. And
true.
Matter of fact, more than one country has kind of become that. I mean, that's not so uncommon in Europe or. But you're running.
It's interesting that you brought that up, John. Two nights ago, I had dinner with a 22-year-old who I had just met for the first time. And she was very well read, very worldly in her views and ideas. And she was supposed to fly out that day to London just for a vacation for a week, and you know, paid all the extra money and was guaranteed her passport, and it didn't come in time. And I just thought she handled it so well. And she said, you know, there might just be something else I'm supposed to be doing, or maybe there's just some reason I can handle this. And, you know, she was smart enough as a traveler to get her insurance and all that. So we ended up having a wonderful conversation. And I said, well, why did you want to go to England? She said, well, I've been there once before. And what I love about it is that there's just so many different kinds of people in London, and they seemingly all get along. And that was her take. Now, she is a girl who works as a server, a bartender. She went to college. It didn't work for her. She couldn't afford it. And so she left college after 2 years, and her her thing, her biggest concern is like, I don't know how some of my college graduate friends are gonna make it because she makes more money bartending. And she said, but I really want to make a difference in the world. I want to make a difference in life. I don't want to bartend forever. And she just was really honest and candid and so focused. And she said, I see myself leaving this country if we don't get our act together. I don't like living in a place where there's so much hatred toward different groups of people that don't look like us. And she's a young white girl. But I just her take on everything was fascinating. I felt like I had a 2-hour education on like into the mind of a young adult who really cares, who is really smart, but she really doesn't feel like there's a lot for her here, but not in a depressing way. She wasn't, goth about it or anything. She was very upbeat and knows she has options.
Right.
And it was just fascinating. It was a little, it was like my little social experiment the other night to, sit and, chat with her for 2 hours, and it was wonderful. And I, again, it leaves me scratching my head. I don't know what to do with some of these experiences because I wish there wasn't that sense of hopelessness about our country. Because that sense of hopelessness for somebody who isn't innately positive like she is, that can take somebody down. That can really be a terrible bane on society if too many people become hopeless. We're gonna have a lot of struggles.
Well, it's easy for things to be played in obvious way, weird and weird unusual way. First of all, you got the domination of the media by a very small number of billionaires. About 80-90% of all media is in the hands of, I think, 12 or 13 billionaires. Okay. So it's pretty, and they, and those media commercial empires, so to speak, they, they're operating for profit, okay, on the level of internet, but also from an ideological standpoint, they're not interested in anything that affects negatively their own interests, okay? So you end up in a really bizarre, look at all the entertainments. Look at the number of movies being produced on the streaming media, right? It's just unbelievable how much effort is being put into it. But on the terms of keep having a civilized society, a civil society, it's none of it's helping any of that. All of that media is mostly, I don't know. I don't know. Some of it's great. I love the Perry Mason series, man. I just dig the hell out of it. There's so much that is negative and depressing and dystopic, that, and then you read the headlines, and it's just like it's propaganda, in many cases, right? Look at the fact that now, in a way, this focus on Trump, for example, which is unavoidable. And you can't get away from it. And he has done what he has always done, is dive right into it. He doesn't fear it. It's interesting. Even though he's at risk, you would think, okay. But the whole country is focused on this melodrama. How much of it has anything to do with people's living or working conditions? I'm not sure. I'm just not sure.
Well, and I keep going back to what Eli said, and I think that was a wonderful answer, and I love it because when I was your age, Eli, that was my idealism. We need to lift everybody up together and, work toward a common goodness. And I just absolutely love it. And I still feel that way. I've been slapped down several times and put in my place with that idealism, but it's still within me, and it drives me to this day, and I don't ever lose that, because you're going to need it. And you know, the Trump thing, I was with my aunt in Delaware, who just devours Fox News. You know, she is an avid consumer. Right. Yeah. If you could gain weight on Fox News, she would definitely be obese. And I asked her, so I saw her on Wednesday, and I asked her, I said, "Now, did you get out of the house and go to trivia last night?" Because she goes to trivia on Tuesday nights. She said, "No, I was just too somber. I am just so sad what this country is doing to this poor man." And I'm still speechless, clearly.
Right.
I said, are you talking about what I think you're talking about?" And she said, "Yes, they're a nice family. Look at them. They're all gorgeous. They're nice. I mean, you might not like his sense of humor, but," and I'm just thinking, what?
Yeah.
Right. But until you experience that and realize that that person is human flesh and bones and votes, you just don't understand where all these people come from. But no, the more I meet them, I'm just, and they're in my family, and I'm just like, "Oh, God love you." And I just gave her a hug and changed the subject. I don't know.
So
it's impenetrable. You can't do anything about it.
I keep, and I had the same problem with the January 6th uprising, which was clearly serious in the sense that some people got killed, and was obviously entangled with some very powerful people in the both the House, possibly in the D.C. Guard, okay, that were, you know, involved at some level. But it looked more like a movie production of an uprising to me than historical ones that I actually know about. And
right,
you know, it's just a feeling. I can't prove it, you know. I just that, remember that movie Wag the Dog? It was out, I don't know, decade or so ago, you know, about, you know, "Oh, we want to stage a coup, but we would like you to make it look like a really great movie, you know, in the sky." And anyway, so I had that, and so I find it discouraging in a way that, you know, if Trump is indicted, and so what? We're liberated from exactly what, you know, by that. And on the other hand, if you don't indict the guy, I mean, forget about any pretense of everybody is equal under the law. I mean, even if it's not true, mm-hmm. in many ways anyway, it's even less true if he gets away with all this stuff, right? So so in a way, you have no choice, which makes you then come around and wonder whether or not, you know, the problems in the country are, they're partly the wrong or right ideas people may or may not have, but there are systematic issues that have been developing for quite a while, certainly since World War II.
Well, I think another great example of that, and Eli, this is something young Democrats should certainly follow. I don't know if you've been following it at all, is what is happening in Nashville in the House of Representatives. So after the school shooting last week, there were protesters outside of the House of Representatives in Nashville, and the Republican-led House would not give anybody a chance to speak on gun control. And they were basically shutting out the voices. So the three Democratic representatives in the House, one from Memphis, one from Nashville, and one from Knoxville, and they're all young Democratic representatives. They're newbies. And one is a really great advocate and kind of organizer, Josh, the one that lives in Nashville. So anyway, they joined with the protesters and chanted to make a statement that, you know, they deserve to be heard. Their voice deserves to be heard, that the three Democratic representatives collectively represent 210,000 Tennesseans. Well, just yesterday, two of those three, the House voted, and two of the three representatives were expelled. They voted to expel them. So that is huge. That has not happened. In the only other time in Tennessee that it has happened was one was somebody committed a sexual crime and was convicted and was expelled. So they used the word insurrection. They said that these three Democrats were inciting an insurrection. They used the same language of January 6th and turned it on these three Democrats that, yes, broke House rules of conduct, like within the House, like on the floor. And they should have gotten, you know, according to the rules, they should have gotten, you know, their hand slapped, you know. But expulsion is huge because you are discounting the voices of the voters that they represent. And so all of this was unfolding yesterday, and a lot of turmoil is happening because these are all young Democrats who fought really hard to get elected. And it's very scary. And the one who spoke from Nashville, he said, every American should be paying attention to this. He said, if I get expelled, indeed, that's what's going to happen. But this is the most frightening thing that has happened in a long time in our country. And so it's going to have lasting repercussions, what they did yesterday. And I don't know which two they, I don't know what caveat they used to not expel one and expel the other two. I haven't followed up on it yet this morning, but it is certainly a hair-raising story because the punishment certainly doesn't fit the crime and, you know, an abuse of power. You know, they have power in the House, and everything that's happening in Tennessee is frightening to me right now, honestly.
They have the, we've got, we're doing good. They have the same temperament here, a lot of the Republicans, at least, in West Virginia, which
I know.
We spent last week talking to, you know, Lucia about our sort of co-intendant experiences with the West Virginia legislature. She had more success than we did, than the labor movement did. But still, you know, you looked, it had that same feel to it of the these people, the whole bunch of them.
Sure.
They have a super majority. They don't even want to talk to you. They don't care.
Right.
And
right.
You know, you have to walk in and point a pistol at them, get them to sit down for a minute. So it's I don't know what
they probably
do
wouldn't
that.
Sit down. They'd just shoot back.
Yeah. Right. Well, you have to, you know. Anyway, so I think that you know, I don't know how to really say all that. I mean, I've talked to two prominent Democrats. I won't mention names really right now that don't intend to run again as Democrats. And I said, well, mm-hmm. What, you're going to run as a Republican? You know, no. But they said there's no point in running as a Democrat in the state. You're going to lose. And mm-hmm. I was also.
That's true.
And I was at the a state legislative council for the FL-CIO, and a number of folks from different areas had a similar kind of attitude. I mean, a big question is, for example, is the council going to spend a lot of money on candidates that are already 20 points behind in the polls? At which, you know, in most people would agree, is an insuperable gap.
That was where I wanted to
gap. I don't
Yeah,
know.
I wanted to go there with Eli in what your opinion is personally, and if you think people of your generation would kind of be more motivated with independent candidates.
I don't know. My intuitive answer is no. I think the two-party system is really hard to break away from. And I think as we're facing increased polarization, the answer isn't going to be third parties as much as it is going to be more extreme versions of our current left and right. Because while we, you can have a third party that represents some of the fringes. I don't know if the Libertarians, the Green Parties are the ones for that. And like the fringes that you get on the right, the fringes that you get on the right aren't usually third party right leaning people. They're, it seems like, extreme Trump people. And kind of maybe the fringes you get on the left aren't Green Party people, but are more like progressive Democrats, like AOC, Bernie, et cetera. Not to say that I really think that Trump people and Bernie people are equal in all regards, but these both represent kind of the anti-establishment kind of like populist movements. And I think I think populism is the new wave before third parties are. And I think if Bernie ran third party, going off his populist example, I don't think that would fare well for him. Trump, however, I don't know.
I know.
Yeah, I think people are at the point that they'll follow. I mean, they followed him off Twitter. That's pretty significant. So they'll probably follow him to the end of the earth.
Well, I think that data does show that people will vote across lines, party lines, even without changing their registration much or as much. For example, the Democrats still have a majority of registered voters in West Virginia, but they're losing the election by 60-40, which is odd, but I have to confess, I've been a friend of Bernie Sanders for almost 50 years now. So, and he is a lifelong supporter of my union, and he's a bit of a genius about how you don't have to have a whole lot of money to get elected, if you know what to do. And I'm not sure he ever actually became a Democrat. He might have when he ran. I don't think he did. Did he? I don't think he did. Well, for a long time he didn't. He caucuses with the Democrats, but I don't think he runs as a Democrat. And I'm not sure about the last time he ran. Okay, but anyway, I think you. I don't think anyone's planning on running a third party effort of the people I was thinking of. Okay, but I do think they're thinking of stepping away. I mean, well, let's talk about the most prominent one would be Joe Manchin, okay, who most recently was asked how he was going to run. I'm going to run as an American. We wouldn't commit. Okay, now, obviously, no matter who knows what he's really going to do, and I hear, most of the left in West Virginia focused on attacking Manchin, not Capito. Manchin. Everyone hates him, because he believes in the center of the road, even if the road's a sewer. Okay, I mean, but he believes it. I mean, it's not an unprincipled kind of opportunism. Yeah, he believes it. Okay, and he's not gonna change from that either. I'm sure. I mean, he's not going to give up on the coal interests or the energy interests, because right now they're funding the state. They're the only, we're the second biggest energy producer in the country in terms of value added. And most of the problem is all the value heads out of the state. Most of it, you know, you get to tax a little sliver of it. Okay. But I don't know. I mean, and so I saw yesterday that wait and see position on whether he was going to support the Trump indictment. Okay. And, well, you know, 60% of the people in the state voted for Trump. Joe's going down the middle. And, same thing on abortion. You know, it doesn't have majority support abortion rights does not have majority support in the state. And on the other hand, you're not going to win anything by stabbing yourself in the back and, you know, starting to act like a Republican and think that's going to get you some votes. I mean, plus nobody, I mean, if candidates cross lines, right, then, there's a question of, is the person trustworthy, right? In other words, we had Jason Barrett that crossed party lines here in Berkeley County, Berkeley County, state senator, became a Republican. Everybody blames it on his wife. I'm not sure. Okay, that's going a little far. But anyway, but nonetheless, when you cross the line and you get, and they offer you, you're offered a benefit, like a seat on a committee or a position, right? Where, and you convince yourself, oh man, I'm going to be able to bring back more to my people, if I get a influential position on a House or Senate in a Senate committee, than if I sit here and protest all the time and lose every vote. That kind of thing, right? So you can see the temptation, that might be there. Even an honest temptation. But nonetheless, once you cross the line, the people that paid for you to do that know you can be bought. All right. And they also know the other side can buy you back, if the price is right. You think you're going to get something, and frankly, in many cases, you don't. Okay, so.
I think that's always what has fascinated me about politics is that fine line between integrity, like you were saying, people will know you can always be bought, but more and more, people don't care.
So, what's the price?
Like that what's the whole price? Thing is kind of right. So maybe just do what you got to do to get it done. I don't know. It's like, so, it's such a moral conflict for me.
Right.
And, I don't know, Eli, if you know that my daughter is an environmental lobbyist for the West Virginia Environmental Council, and she is a Shepherd graduate. And I mean, when she first started having to go represent in our state capitol, I mean, I felt like I was throwing my infant baby into a quicksand pond, I was just like, oh no, my baby. Because I know how tragically yucky it is.
Right.
And where she was going to be able to balance and walk that line between her morals and what she believes in and what she is lobbying for and the, backroom deals in Charleston, most of them happen at happy hour. I found and they don't have a back room anymore. There's a couple spots, the hot spots, but, she said, I never thought that happy hour was going to become part of my job. And she's not a drinker. So she right. just goes and sits in the bar. But it is like part of her job.
Right. You have to.
She quickly learned that exactly what you were talking about. I'm kind of putting a lighter spin on it, but I think John, what you said about, you know, people, if you flip-flop around, people will know that you can be bought, but I think that's becoming less of an issue because I think it's just become part of the fabric of our culture.
Eli, what do you think about...
Happy about it.
I want to get some input. What would you do about... What would you... When you think about the giant tech monopolies or tech companies... like Amazon or Google, for that matter, there's calls in Congress to and from some political people. I think Biden has indicated some support, although I don't know what he would do without the Washington Post support. But breaking up the tech companies, you have any thoughts on that?
At least it's something that. Is seemingly increasingly bipartisan in the sense that, you know, earlier I mentioned, and this is something I really believe, that it seems like less we have, which we obviously, of course, still have a left and right divide. But I think there's, like I said, there's this growing sentiment of populism, and there's this growing sentiment of distaste for what we perceive as elites. Now, of course, the left and right define this differently in a lot of cases. But, you know, what we kind of colloquially know as big tech is something that's not loved on each side. You know, one thing I'll hear from people on the right is, from my experience, a lot of far right-leaning people will get banned off of platforms because they'll violate the terms of service. And this kind of creates the perception of, oh, far right voices are, you know, not being silenced. And, you know, maybe in some cases they might be, you know, you can never really fully prove anything, but I guess the point I'm getting at is that there does seem to be this growing distaste towards it. I'm not too sure how this will go and, you know, like nationally in our Congress. But, you know, I think it'd be foolish to say that we shouldn't expect to see something come out of this growing sentiment. But, you know, I'm not going to make predictions for the next couple of months.
Right.
But you guys were talking about something earlier.
Oh, no.
Well, it escapes me, but it was about people crossing party lines.
Yeah.
And Karen brought this point, just like, doesn't really think that people care. I think that's kind of true. I think people identify more. Well, if you've ever talked to someone who doesn't vote, especially in 2016, if you talk to someone, or in just presidential elections are a good example. You know, Biden or Trump, Trump or Hillary, and it's people will identify with them on a personality basis. You know, people really like Trump because he was abrasive. And I think, you know, just taking Trump again for an example, because he's just the best person to make examples out of, I guess.
Right.
If you were to put Trump in a different party, you know, someone who's kind of old school might say, wow, look how he's willing to change across party lines. And he's willing to change, you know, let's say Trump was a Democrat or something, how he's willing to change his beliefs, you know, because we join a party because they are reflective of our beliefs. I don't think people really see the world in that way as much. I think people get attached to who they're going to support, and they just start to get really rooted in that. You know, because admitting that if you see someone change party and they change their beliefs, you have to now admit that this person now has different beliefs than you, or maybe that you were wrong on something, and people don't want to do that. And I heard this really good example relating to this about the Trump indictment, that you're kind of screwed if you do, screwed if you don't situation, where So if Trump didn't get indicted, for example, they'd be like, wow, or supporters of Trump would be like, wow, look, the American system of justice has persevered. You know, look, they tried to indict Trump on these weak charges. It's all this big ploy against him. And if they did indict him, it would be, wow, our system is so corrupt. I can't believe that it indicted this poor innocent man. And I think that idea of people will get rooted in something, or they'll kind of like have their conclusions first and then they'll rationalize second. It sure sounds really dystopian, but unfortunately, I think there's a lot of truth in that being the case.
Yeah, I think you got a point. So, that's true.
I agree. It's frightening. Yeah.
Well, I also, you know, keep the question of crossing party lines is a little bit different if you're a billionaire like Trump. I mean, Trump used to be a Democrat. Who knows if he ever was?
Yeah, he did.
And
he was a Clinton supporter, right?
Yeah. Well, he kept inviting the Clintons to his party when they were in New York. Once they moved to New York after the presidency, and
right.
I don't know what to say about that. You know, whatever. But the so he's, you know, he it's all been, he just figured the Republican Party, he's always been a racist, okay? That's a theme that goes all the way back with Trump, mm-hmm. you know, to his father, and he's never deviated from it ever. And so, you know, if you're gonna do that, well, then, you know, the Republican Party these days is a place to be. So, and he thought they were stupid, the organization. Because they didn't have any presence, their candidates were boring, you know, all this stuff, and so he did his thing, and Hillary, you know, would have been an unbelievable, much better, but nonetheless, you know, she has weaknesses, and you know, and one of the things that was exposed is the Democratic Party is not so much the party of the working class anymore. Mm-hmm. You can say things that there's lots of subtleties to that. You got a major political scientist. I mean, the guy at Harvard, what's his name? I can't remember his name right now. He writes brilliant. A lot of people have noted this. All the Europeans now also note that the liberal and labor, the liberal parties at least, are now mostly are divided by education, way more than you know, trades, class, you know, wage earner. So you end up with this situation where in the FL-CIO, for example, you're not going to get you know, I'd say 30-40% of the members voted for Trump. Now, a majority did not, okay? So unionism does mean something, you know, but because Trump hates unions too. Nonetheless, you can see, you know, that's a split. That's a bad split in labor. If you have a shop where you have 30, 40, 50% of your members fighting you, well, you forget about bargaining with the company. they're just gonna play you one side against the other and do whatever they want. I don't see how you turn the thing around unless you pick up, you know, take back the working class voters in West Virginia that used to be all vote Democrat. And, you know, it's worth paying attention to the fact that when Bernie ran his primary campaign in the 2006, he did better. Now, the timing of the Republican and Democratic primaries, you know, make the comparison of numbers not quite real. But still, he did better than Trump in the Democratic primary than Trump did in the Republican one. And Hillary started, I mean, I remember her criticism at the time, you know, she didn't pick up on the meaning of that. You know, she turned around and started attacking Sanders for being like Trump. Well, why? Because he says... he does this typical, he does a straight United Electrical Workers is my union, and Bernie pretty much adopted the tactics of my union. You know, you talk about wages, benefits, equality, and, you know, find something for everyone to do and leave no one behind. That's the message. And so I don't care what you're, you know, if you're living on wages, man, you listen to that. It's gonna have an impact. But you can't, you gotta do
that. And that's a lot of what
well, you gotta emphasize where you can do it. And then if you're, or you can go in and you can have a big argument about and focus on social issues, abortion, other issues that you know are all tied up with people's religion and all this garbage stuff, you know, and you can do that, but you will lose. If you don't figure out the tactics of the thing and structure it that way. So, and that's what I mean. Bernie's brilliant at that. Okay. Yeah. I'll tell one last story, one Bernie story. So when I went to Burlington, I was a UE rep in New England. And I went up to when he was getting ready to run for mayor of Burlington, I attended a meeting of one of the labor things up there, and Bernie was there, and I said, I was talking to him, and he says, well, you don't have, who's backing you? Do you have any money? And he wanted the AFL-CIO's backing, and but they were completely hooked up at the time with the Democrats in Vermont, and they weren't going to step outside and vote for an independent socialist running for mayor. And he didn't look like he could win. He didn't have any money. And we gave him some money, even though we didn't have any members in Burlington, so we didn't really walk out plank and, you know, get involved officially. So I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, hey, here's what I'm going to do. He said, come with me. And so we drive around town, and he's got his police band radio going on in his car, okay? And he's looking for, you know, an accident, you know? Because he's gonna go to the scene of the accident, you know, any place where there's both a news broadcast and an accident, because you know there's gonna be a reporter there, and he also knew that the cops are not gonna want to talk to the reporters at all, but the reporters are gonna not want to waste a trip to the scene and not talk to anybody, so Bernie's gonna be there and they're gonna talk to him. it didn't matter whether it was a
trip. That was his advertising.
That was it. Oh yeah. And so I drove with him. He did this. It was outrageous. It really worked. And pretty soon, you know.
Well, something outrageous we can end on. I want each of your opinions. You know, we've had, unfortunately, terrible things happen when we name things after politicians who stand for one thing or another. You know, think of the whole, you know, what was it, Robert Lee statue in Charlottesville, and people died, or, you know, whatever. So I'm a big believer that, like, let's just stop naming things after politicians. We're not adult enough to do this. We're not able to handle this as responsible adults. So I read this story last week, and it was the story of the week for me. And I sent it to my daughter and a couple other people that are into politics, because I like a light and funny story every now and again. So this has to do with West Virginia politics. And Eli, I'm sure you're familiar with our Governor Jim Justice, and that he has a French bulldog named Baby Dog. And Baby Dog has a personal handler. I've been told that money comes out of the state budget to have Baby Dog accompany him in the state legislature and all of that. So last week at Babcock State Park here in West Virginia, they officially had a ribbon cutting and named a waterfall Baby Dog Falls. I said, only in my state.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's my funny for the week.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know what to say. It's just it's flabbergasting. West Virginia's my you know my mother was born in a town here that doesn't no longer exists. Okay, called Dorothy, and there's a graveyard there, but that's it. You know now, so it's just there's a lot of things in the state that. It's hard to tell. I think the only way out ultimately
but I love it.
Is to get a whole, is to get control of the energy industry in a do a Norway of some kind. You know, use the create a sovereign wealth fund, renegotiate the contracts so that you can invest in the future. I mean, like, what are you going to do with it? What possible change can you do with education? When you know the neighboring counties to Jefferson County, you know, pay $10,000 to $15,000 more a year for a teacher, and you can't fix it in West Virginia except by fixing it statewide. You cannot change a teacher's salary in Jefferson County if you don't change Boone County too. Okay, and there's
Eli,
a little...
are you from West Virginia?
Yeah, I'm actually from the Charleston area.
Right. So.
Oh, wonderful.
So
okay.
You understand anyway. Well, I think it's been great to Eli. Why don't you, if you have a last word, you should get the last word here, and you know, maybe you want to cry for help, for you know, whatever you think would be appropriate. Okay.
I don't have too much. You know, if for whatever reason, someone wants to reach out to me, you know.
Yeah, what's your contact? It'll be on the tape.
Is there something? I'll give my shepherd email. That's how I'm best good. Reached. But it's EHALL03 at rams.shepherd.edu.
Right.
But I just have to finish at least by saying, well, first of all, Karen, does your daughter's name start with an L?
Yeah.
Lucia.
Okay.
L-U-C-I-A.
Yeah. I think I met her at Environmental Day at the Capitol.
Oh, did you come with the Shepherd Group to E-Day?
I did, yeah.
Oh, okay, I was there as well. And I was really happy to see your professor bring a group up, and I thought that was fabulous, yeah.
Yeah, it was a really awesome experience. But yeah, I guess the big takeaway from this whole thing is that Baby Dog Falls is an amazing part of our state.
I got to go there now. Okay. All right, everybody. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Eli. And we'll be back next Friday at 7 o'clock in the morning to do the Winners and Losers radio program. My name is John Case, and you can contact us. We're playing all the time on www.enlightenradio.org. And it's late. But everything comes next. Take care, everybody.